Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service. Catch all the hard-hitting news and current affairs that focuses on all relevant First Nations issues from a First Nations standpoint. This is Bo Spearham with Let's Talk.
Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk. Before I go on any further, I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners on his land we are broadcasting from. I also would like to pay my respects to our elders and also our elders of more recent arrival. And a good morning to everybody around the continent that is taking our program via the National Indigenous Radio Service NIRS, or listening via our app, which is 98.9 FM for the best country, or listening via our website, which is 98.9fm.com.au. All those platforms beaming us into your community. So it is great to have your company, and a good morning to everybody. And my guest on the program this morning, I had him on the show a few weeks ago to talk about an important opportunity and an important occasion for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people within this country. So on, I believe it was Monday the 3rd of this month, is the Mabo Oration, but also marks the anniversary of that great man as well. But I'll shoot over to my guest, Brother Luke Pearson, who's up here in Brisbane, enjoying the supposed good weather that we're supposed to have, but not enjoying anything, but cold winds and not too good weather. But I'll just pass over to Brother. Your mob and your country, please.
Hey, Gamilla Roy Fowler. Good to be back, man. Always like coming on Avian.
Deadly, always great to have you on. And so, yeah, kicking off from our last conversation, you were preparing to have to be the orator of the Mabo Oration on Monday night a few nights ago. How'd you go? How'd it go?
Yeah, man, it was a really, really nice night. They ended up selling out, so it was pretty much a full house there at QPAC. And, had the Mabo family there, which... Yeah, just made it that extra bit special, doing it in their honour, you know, the legacy of their father. And, of course, the mother, Benita, you know, passed away not long ago, so I was very mindful that this was the first oration, since that had happened. So, but, yeah, no, it was just such an amazing opportunity, and I was the first one, basically, who hasn't been sort of, you know, high-up lawyer-type orator. So, it was sort of... When they asked me, I was like, it won't be what you normally get. They were keen for that. And after, you know, the family were really happy with it all, and that was my big thing. You know, I know how to talk to mob, I know how to talk to white followers, but like I said, when you got the family there, you know, you got to make sure you do it justice.
Definitely, of course. And like, it's one thing to sort of prepare for an event to talk at, and then it's another thing to be there as well and sort of present that in a way, like you said, you know, to be mindful and respectful of the family, you know, at the oration, at the event, you know, before and after as well, because sometimes, you know, I guess our nerves can get the better of us. But I take it you were sweet with all that there?
Oh, man, yeah, as you know, I do my fair share of public speaking and then some. But we had to turn up a fair bit early for this one. So I was on at like 6:15, I think, that I had to turn up at 2 to do all the mic checks and the stage checks and, you know, all that sort of business. And then I had too long to go over it in my head. So sort of about 4 o'clock, the nerves really started hitting me. And then, yeah, with about 5 minutes to go, I was like, yeah, calm down. I know what I'm doing. I know, you know, they picked me for a reason. So I just walked up and had a yarn. So I think I was the first orator who, you know, didn't have a speech in front of them to present from. I don't do that style of talk. I usually just get up and speak from the heart and hope for the best. And, it went well.
Deadly. And I guess what were some of your talking points as well?
Well, the main focus for me was... Yeah, you know, when you're looking at the legacy of the Mabo case, and, you know, like I said, the anniversary on the 3rd of June, you know, defeating the myth of Terra Nullius, and in so many ways for me, all of the myths, all of the stereotypes that have plagued us for the last couple of hundred years, all sort of grow out of a need to justify terra nullius. You know, when your argument is that this was a land that didn't belong to us, then you kind of by necessity have to deny that we had science, that we had agriculture, that we had anything. You know, you've basically got to deny that we were a people with societies. And so looking at, you know, his work in underpinning that, like, you know, getting rid of that myth, you know, in that legal framework, but how many of those other stereotypes still plague us. And, you know, that one thing, no matter how much we might get, you know, laughed at or criticised or belittled or abused for speaking our truth, you know, he clung to his truth and they came good on the day. But it's sort of like, even if the High Court had have ruled against it, it still would have been true.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And that's something that we've always got to remind ourselves of, you know, no matter how bad things get. We know that truth. We know who we are. Mm. We know what we are. We know how special it is to be Indigenous. Mm. And so, yeah, part of what I was talking about, people like when we talk about Indigenous now, it's like, oh, you want special treatment. It's like, well, we are special. We are the Indigenous peoples of this land. That is special. Mm. Like, so, you know, they say it in that really cruel, belittling way, but it's like, no, actually, yeah, no, it is. It's different. It's special, mm. and it should be treated as such. Mm. And, yeah, so that was a big focus. And then, like I said, though, you know, I wanted to really make sure I hit those serious points, but also keep it a bit light, you know, keep people engaged and entertained. So I told a few personal stories and had a bit of a yarn and took it off in different directions. And mm-hmm. there were lots of laughs from the crowd, and it was really nice because you got the big lights up on QPAC, you're up on that stage, you know, 700-800 people, whatever it is, sitting in the audience, you can't really see anyone. Mm-hmm. Those bright lights are sort of beaming down on you, but I'd hear a few laughs here and then after I learnt, you know, biggest ones were coming from the Marlo family sitting together there, so that was really, really special for me.
That's good, that's good. It's deadly. And your family was there in attendance, or do they always go watch you speak as well?
Unfortunately not, you know, a lot of the travel and talks and things, you know, we're trying to make a living as well as educate and get the word out on things, so it's not often, you know, three kids, partner, you know, accommodation fee, so it's pretty rare. I did a talk down at Twitter, and because that was Sydney, we all just got the train down. And a little girl jumped up on stage with me when I was getting interviewed by the fathers for Twitter, so that was nice. Mm. But yeah, to have the kids in the audience, and I mean, yeah, they're still young men, so they're falling asleep and not caring what I'm doing. But it's just for me, it was still really special to have them there, and definitely. It's hopefully something they'll look back on when they get a bit older and watch the video when they can appreciate it a bit more, and hopefully that'll speak to them too.
Definitely, and I'm sure it will, you know, because this is an important day, you know, for the, you know, I guess for the Mabo family, but, you know, for all of our mob as well around this concept.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, articulate.
Yeah, right. Yeah, my partner Jade, she's a, you know, Rajari Gambangi woman, and the first time she's been somewhere where we only got married a couple of weeks ago, so first time to have her there as my wife.
Oh, definitely, yes, congratulations.
And I was fighting that after, being like, oh, you know, how good was Luke? And she's like, I live with him, I hear this stuff all the time. I'm not impressed.
I'm sure that's the same with Jade when, you know, people go up to Jade, oh, he's great on radio. I'm sure she's like, oh, I hear it all the time as well. Hear that voice, yeah. Sick of it. Nah. I'm sure that's the same as well. But yeah, and after, you know, you said the family appreciated it and enjoyed it as well?
Yeah, man, and yeah, like I said, that was my big thing, you know, as I'm sort of walking through after doing the reception, I'm like, oh, yeah, well done, well done. And it's like, you know, whenever you do a talk, people are going to say well done. You know, you never really get that real feedback from the family, though. I knew I'd get honest feedback, so I got to have some really good chats with some of the children and grandchildren, and they were all really, really impressed and really happy and glad. Like I said, you know, we're still going through sorry business for their mum. You know, to have something that was a bit lighter, a bit more engaged, and, you know, took them on a bit of a journey rather than, you know, I think, you know, there was a tribute to their mother that Aunty Colleen gave, and that was really beautiful. But that, like I said, for me, I didn't want to, you know, take them back through any painful memory, so I sort of made that link between the legacy, you know, the big part, not just the legal side, which, you know, like I said, first non-lawyer, so I didn't speak to the legal side of it. But I think for most mob, you know, that standout legacy is he killed terra nullius. Mm. And that's that big bad dragon, and then everyone, they're trying to kill for 200 years, and they did it. So I just use that as that leverage point to talk about how important it is that no matter what obstacles we're facing, no matter what we're going through, you know, we hold that truth that we all know, even if the world sort of doesn't want to hear it from us, we've still got to keep it and we've got to fight for it.
My guest on the program this morning to talk about an important opportunity and an important occasion for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people within this country. So on, I believe it was Monday the 3rd of this month, is the Mabo Oration, but also marks the anniversary of that great man as well. But my guest, Brother Luke Pearson.
6 years I've been in the desert, and every night I dream of the sea. They say home is where you find it. Will this place ever satisfy me? For I come.
Sales.
my guest on the program this morning to talk about an important opportunity and an important occasion for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people within this country. So on, I believe it was Monday the 3rd of this month, is the Mabo Oration, but also marks the anniversary of that great man as well. But my guest, Brother Luke Pearson, and I guess also as well, because you are the founder of Indigenous X as well, and you're working heavily within that space as well. Did you, obviously you couldn't put out any tweets during the conversation?
No, yeah, I was up on stage for it, but they told me afterwards that the Mabo Oration hashtag was trending number one at one point, so that was really nice.
Deadly, that's cool.
Lots of mob online, because they had it going live on the Facebook on QPAC's page. You can still see the video there if you go and find QPAC, the Queensland Performing Arts Centre. Mm-hmm. Their Facebook page, they got the video there.
Yeah,
so a couple of hours, but yeah, I'm only talking for half hour, then a half hour yarn with Leander Patrick afterwards. But yeah, definitely watch the whole video. But just saying, like, you don't, it's not 2 hours of just me talking. Like, that'd be a bit much. Lots of mob getting in, and yeah, a lot of mob, particularly tweeting Terra Nullius is a lie as a hashtag alongside of Mabo Oration. And so that was really nice to see so many mob get behind it, you know.
Definitely. No, we had a community morning tea yesterday, so came into work. There was a community talk 2 days ago on Monday. So came into work, done the show, and then a few of us from work went down and sort of, you know, listened in on, you know, the stories of that great man. And, you know, mob from the Torres Strait Islander community, you know, that live down here in Brisbane, called Brisbane Home, sort of reflecting on their relationship with him as well, which is very, very special. And then elders, you know, who have been involved in sort of the struggle since the 70s and the 60s, and sort of getting up and having that discussion and saying, oh, you know, we were all, you know, sharing their stories as well, of Eddie Mabo, you know, before the case, you know, before the High Court case, you know, talking about, you know, him in the lead up and stuff as well, which was something great to hear as well, because I think for the most part, when we have these sort of polarizing figures within our community, they sort of get, you know, sort of portrayed off of sort of one thing that, you know, that they're known for, you know, that highlight. But, you know, like, obviously for him, you know, and for his family, you know, he would have been, I'm sure, to his family, a deadly man that, you know, done a lot more than sort of, you know, just this case, you know, just the High Court decision, which was, you know, in itself very, very important, you know, for our mob. But I'm sure he gave lots of things as well, you know, in support of.
Yeah, no, and that was something I really wanted to touch on briefly in the oration, was that, you know, as much as we hold up these people, like I said, you know, we're talking about the myth of Terra Nullius, and in many ways we hold up these figures and then we make myths out of them as well, we make legends out of them. And in doing that, sometimes I worry that we make them, you know, unattainable. Don't recognize that these are just people going about their lives, you know, raising their kids, going to work, you know, struggling, you know, with other things in their life as well. And so, you know, it's something really important to me that we never lose sight of that, because, you know, in the process of doing that, I think it makes it hard for people to imagine the great things they could do in their life. It's like, oh, I could never be that amazing person that we've turned into. You know, not in any way to belittle the amazing achievement that case brought home, but it is like we're all just people, you know, we're all capable of great things. And the more we humanize our heroes, the more likely people are to think, and I can do great things too, you know, what is that truth I want to fight for? And even though most of us, you know, probably won't achieve something to that level of, you know, overturn and something like that in the High Court. Mm. You know, there's greatness is achieved in many ways, and sometimes just living a good life and being a good partner and parent and, you know, working hard and keeping true is, that matters too.
Definitely, of course. And I guess to some, you know, is even greater as well in the eyes of, you know, other people as well, you know, doing these sort of things in the community or things within the family setting as well, which could be seen in, which is great as well, you know. And like, yeah, you really hit it, like humanizing these figures as well, Because, yeah, I think that's a thing. You know, we forget that, yeah, like you said, you know, we can attain greatness as well. We can be movers and shakers within our lifetime, you know, and, like, leave legacies like that. You know, that whole, you know, we walk on in the footsteps of giants, which is true, we do, you know, and, you know, we have to, hold these people to high esteem because they achieved great things as well. But, you know, there's still many deadly people out there that are doing, you know, deadly things as well.
Yeah. And I think it's that balancing. You know, I think we've seen a lot of it probably even, you know, more starkly in that internet social media age where, you know, we see one person who does something good and everyone's like, oh, they're the best person in the world. And then we find out they also did something that wasn't so good. And we're like, oh, no, screw them. They're not. And so, you know, we've gotten to this process of we over-glorify people and then we get disillusioned when we find out, you know, that they weren't 100% perfect. It's like, none of us are, you know, and yeah, we've all got our ups and downs and our good and bad, and, you know, you just hope at the end of the day the good outweighs the bad. But, you know, for me, like, because I have, you know, just through Twitter and through writing, there are people who probably have a sense that they've got a feel of who I am, and I hope that they, you know, do have a sense of who I am, but unless you've spent time, you know, sitting about with me, having yarns, like, you only know those bits of me that you see, so it's important to remember. Yeah, when, especially for those giants in our history who we only read about in the history books, you know, like their kids, their friends, their family, their communities, while they still celebrate them, they knew them as just real people, not just as these fantastical figures.
Definitely, yeah. And I think it's, as important, you know, these figures are within our life and within, you know, our political system or within sort of our history, you know, they're living, breathing people just like us. You know, they're the superheroes, you know, within our community, you know, that have changed our lives, you know, and sort of changed the direction of the conversations that we have now. And yeah, like we've been saying, you know, we have the potential to do that as well and to push that, you know, envelope and to, you know, kick those doors down as well. You know, we have the same potential and the same strength, to do those things, you know, to, you know, walk with that courage and strength, you know, and responsibility like all his other aunties and uncles have before us and are definitely going to, you know, after us or are now as well. Definitely something to look forward to, knowing that, you know, in our community we have great people that are going to achieve greatness. I guess on another note as well, being, you know, the founder of Indigenous X, how is things going on that front? You said that the Mabo Oration was sort of trending on Twitter as well, but how's things on the Indigenous X front going?
Yeah, man, going great guns. As a lot of people who sort of interact with us in real life or follow us online would know, we've got James Saunders.
Yeah, I met Brother Boy the other day, come into work, brought them mob from...
He's based up in Brisbane, but... He's been so good because for years, I think a lot of people sort of think Indigenous X is this big thing where we've got, you know, an office somewhere and a bunch of staff, but, you know, for a long time there it was just me and now it's me and James. Yeah, going great guns then. So we're, you know, getting around to different events, working with you know, a lot of other different Indigenous groups. So we're starting to do a lot more, you know, behind the scenes. Like in those early days, you know, everything we did was in the public eye. It was only on Twitter and on our website. And so everything we did was public facing. Whereas now we're starting to do a lot more work behind the scenes. So upskilling ourselves, collaborating, but, you know, training and assisting people with digital media and, you know, getting their organisation. So like I said, with, you know, so many mob in radio who are sort of making that push into digital, and we're interested in making that push into, you know, podcasting and audio. So there's really exciting times and for good opportunities for collaboration across in Indigenous media. Obviously we've got First Nations media who are out there now as well, being that peak body for Indigenous media. So really hoping that things are going to start to get a lot more collaborative and take a lot more shape. And we obviously, you know, want to play our part in that. You know, obviously Indigenous radio been kicking on for decades and, you know, amazing strengths right across, you know, particularly in remote spaces as well. But digital, still people working that out. And so even though we've only been around for 7 years, we probably more of that senior players in the space for working out what to do on social media and online. Mm. So yeah, we're really hoping we can bring those skills to the table and pick up some of the longer standing ones as well. And yeah, really excited for good things to happen. And off the back of Rec Week there, I put out one article sort of saying, yeah, God, is this now when's Rec Week over? I'm sort of over it already.
Yeah.
A lot of people are like, oh, it's so great, Rec Week. But yeah, for me, like interacting with Indigenous Twitter and other mobs online, you just hear these stories of like, yeah, they got me putting in overtime, organising the morning tea, and want me to get in elders, but they don't want me to pay them, and they got doing this and this. And so, a lot of people don't realise that, for a lot of mobs, it's just extra work and not a lot of actual real change that comes along with that week. And so, I think for a lot of us, it's like reconciliation there for me anyway. That's what I wrote about in that article. Like, it's not in my vocabulary for 51 weeks a year.
Mm.
Like, I'm not sitting there talking about reconciliation. It's not really, it's not something I think about. And then, this 1 week a year, I was like, oh, what are your thoughts? What are you doing? And they're inviting you to come along and give you talks. Most of them not wanting to pay you for it. And it's just, it's just one of them weeks where it's like, man, I'd much rather have any racism week than reconciliation week, because before, we're going to work. It's all about that relationship between Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australia. It's like, man, for me, I'm not out there trying to be best buds with everyone. I'm just trying to get people to stop killing black fellas. Stop keeping them down in their workplaces. Stop, spreading racist bloody stereotypes and myths out there. So.
And that's
it's a hard week.
Yeah, it is for our mob. Lots of, lots of promises. They want to, they want mob to work and do all these wonderful things, but not pay us, for, our labour or our cultural integrity and, cultural, property as well that, we sort of give them and have been giving for quite some time. And also not a lot of truth, that happens through that week. And I think
especially in those workplaces, because if you work there and you come out telling the truth, it's your job to buy for most mobs. It's pretty rare people are in a space where no, there's racism in our workplace. But there's racism in all workplaces, but it's pretty hard to actually be on the books and say that. Definitely. And not expect some backlash for it.
Oh, no, that's in the past. Racism, it's in the history books, not in the workplace.
Yeah, but we've got a reconciliation action plan. We don't do that. So it's just nice then, having a platform where we can write those stories and we can get them out there and, we can challenge that status quo of people thinking. Because it's one of those things where everyone, every now and again I'll say something online when I'm cranky about something. It's like, if you're trying to reconcile with white people, you shouldn't be talking like that. It's like, I never said I was trying to reconcile with anyone. Mm. That's not my business. That's someone else's thing.
Mm,
but we just automatically get lumped with it as though that's what we're out there all day, every day, dreaming of.
Yeah, that's it. We're the beneficiaries of, reconciliation and NAIDOC week, but, no real fundamental, change has come.
Mm-hmm.
The same old story,
unfortunately,
sadly.
But sometimes I think just having that platform where we can actually point out, like I said, there's so many people in there that are like, I had no idea.
Mm.
Or how does your people work? You're sort of out on your own thinking that. And I'm like, no, not a mob.
Mm.
Not a mob feel the way I do. Not universal, of course. We're a diverse mob. And for those mobs who are out there, man, pushing for reconciliation, I'm not against them. Mm. I said, it's just not something that I'm doing.
That's it, definitely.
I don't expect everyone to agree with me or to be doing what I'm doing. But, there are a lot of mobs who are down with reconciliation. But the fact that most people have no idea just shows how much of our truths and our realities, like I was talking about in the narration, just aren't on people's radar. They just don't get access to it. And that's the big thing, with Indigenous X is we want a space where mob can hear stories that they already know. They know it's true, but to actually see it in print, to see it getting shared online.
Mm.
I think there's a strength and there's a power in that. And for non-Indigenous people who had no idea, well, now you've got an idea. Now you can look into it. Now you can pursue that thought on your own,
I think the last time we spoke might have been just before the election, I think, Was it after?
Yeah, it could be Nelly.
I think it was before, and some big, I don't know, yeah, it might have been just after the election. Some funny things came out after it. You know, everybody bagging Queensland, and then all these white folks wanting to move to New Zealand and take their colonial, you know, take their racism with them over there most probably, and mess that up even more than what it is.
Yeah, and it was good. It was good in that chat scene, a lot of mob talk and stuff. We don't, you know, we don't get that luxury.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're here. This is our land. Right. You know, the some mob don't move, you know, other places, but for most of us, it's like, you know, when things get bad, we don't get to say things like that. Mm-hmm. We've got to sit there and we've got to fight through it. And, you know, if you're really talking about, you know, you're an ally and you're on the right side of history and all that business, then, you know, roll up your sleeves and get back to work, because a lot of people were disappointed with the results of the election, and yeah, I was one of them. But at the same time, man, like if it had gone the other way in the election, there still was hard work to be done. You know, that wasn't going to be a magic bullet for us.
Definitely.
Labor weren't coming in on the white horse as white saviors to save the day for us. Yeah, it's funny, you see a lot of Bob when they're just, you know, being, you know, upset or angry about things of the day around that election time. People are like, oh yeah, you know, I'm upset that Liberal won too. And they go, that's not what I'm talking about, man. The problems in Australia with race and racism go far beyond the Liberal Party.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's not a party in the country that doesn't have those issues.
Definitely.
And so, yeah, even though people, you know, whoever you vote for or whatever, there's a lot more going on than just that.
Definitely there is. There always is something else going on. I don't vote, you know, and, you know, I respect the decision of, you know, other black fellas to vote, you know, because as hard as our mob fought, you know, for better conditions, they also fought, you know, for the right to vote as well. Another thing that was, passed my mind. I was going to say now, spewing, I hate when this happens. It was something that was happening.
But yeah, with that, man, too, like, I am, like, and I know a lot of my bar, like, I really struggle between not caring about voting because I don't believe in that political system, but also feeling obliged to vote knowing how hard our mob fought for the right to vote.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think there's a lot of us who are really caught up within that turmoil, that inner struggle that you feel of, like, and like we were kept from voting for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It was real hard for us to be able to vote. And yet it's really hard to get excited about it because, for me, when I'm looking at who I can vote for, it's not who I'm voting for, it's who do I want to vote against more.
Mm.
Like who do I want to keep out is the question, not who do I want to get in, because there's never anyone I want to get in.
That's it, yeah, because I realised that after, you know, like, hearing other mob and my partner, she voted. And it's funny, like, regardless if you're, you know, given the least, the less, what is it?
Lesser two evils.
Yeah, the lesser two evils, yeah, you know, because the last person's going to get the least amount of votes from you. You know, it's still preferenced, or, you know, still going to get, you know, it's a numbers game, and, you know, the less racists we vote for, the, you know, the more racists vote for them as well, which is,
Yeah, man, it's hard. That's, yeah, like, I usually do vote, but it's not cop that fine. No, it's believing in, and even though I know votes do matter, and I know not many people in the country understand how the preference system works, and it's something we should be taught in school, man, because that's what really does matter.
Mm.
So if you don't do your own preferences below the line, then who you vote for, their preferences work instead of yours, and then parties are always doing deals with each other on who gets his preference.
Mm.
And so, you know, that stuff, man, that should be, like, every 12-year-old should know how it works. And like I said, I struggle to get my head around a lot of the time, but it's that stuff that we should all really know, man, whether you vote or not.
Definitely.
Like, you know, the fact that most people, and that this country goes out of its way not to teach people that. Like I said, you know, that's something that, you know, they sit there and say, oh, we shouldn't be doing Aboriginal studies in school, and we've got to teach them about Western culture and society and whatever crap. No one's in a rush to teach people to actually understand where their vote goes and what it does and how it works. And so I was like, how serious are you about, like they love that people don't do their preferences so they get to do preference deals with each other. Mm. If everyone understood how it worked, we all voted below the line, we actually could start to make more change. But like I said, when you don't have a party that you're like, I really like this party, I really support them, then it's just a bit bloody depressing. So I was like, man, I'm only voting because I really hate that party and I don't want them to get in. But if I win and the one that gets in, I'm not really happy about them getting in. Like, that's a depressing political reality.
For sure. And I guess another surprising thing as well is the amount of black fellas that that were up and that ran as, whether they ran with parties or ran as independents as well, quite a few.
Yeah, record numbers, I believe.
About 10, I think it was, which is deadly, yeah.
No, I think it was more like 20.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, I was...
Karen Wilde did an article for us that just sort of... it didn't go into huge detail because there were so many, but it's like, here's all the different people, here's where they're running, here's where they are, go find out more about them. And that's one of those funny things as well, man. It's like, that's something I did touch on in the oration is, like recently there was those questions like, when are we going to have a black PM? And it's like, and I don't even think that would make a huge difference.
No.
Yeah, but even that idea of, collective advancement through an individual reaching new heights. And so, I mean, our system was always about the community. When no one starved unless everyone starved. No one, we were tied together. And so this idea now, we've taken on this savior mindset where you see a lot of people whenever someone puts their hand up and does something good, we're like, oh, they're going to fix it for us. And it's like, man, that's the wrong way to think about things. It's the strength of the community that matters, not the success of the individual.
That's it. Yeah, totally. And these are sort of aspects that sort of, kept our mob, sustainable for, if you want to put a time frame to it, 60,000 years. Bruce Pascoe, articulated it very, very well in his book as well, in Dark Emu. Amazing story, that is. Amazing book, that is, I mean. But I was going to say a big thanks, brother, for coming on the show and having a yarn and, sort of recap that conversation from Monday night about the Mabo oration and, being an orator on that stage as well. The only non-lawyer, a guy who just made a Twitter handle.
Yeah. It's amazing to reflect on all that. Like, they're just so humble, and it's been just like I said, so stoked that the family were on board with it.
Mm.
When I'm up there talking about it, I zone out and I just speak from the heart. So, I'm sure there was a whole bunch of things I talked about that I don't even remember. So, anyone out there is keen, go track it down on that QPAC page on Facebook. We're going to try and get a edited copy of the video and pop that up on indigenousx.com.au at some point in the near future. So keep an eye out for it there too. Thanks for having me on. Always
good, brother. Always good to have you, come on the program and have a yarn. Very insightful, very important discussion that you was a part of. And then also, the platform that you have with Indigenous X is always very, very important. So always keen to have you on the program, my brother. And for my listeners, if you're just tuning in, my guest is Luke Pearson, founder of Indigenous X, spoke on Monday night for he was the orator of the Mabo Oration for 2019. If you enjoyed the program, you can listen back 7 p.m. tonight or listen to the repeat on 98.9fm.com.au.